Call the meeting of the House Resources Committee to order. Time is now 1:03 p.m., March 5, Friday, 2021. Let the record show that we have Representative McKay, Representative Rauscher, Vice Chair Hopkins, Representative Hannon, Representative Gillum, Representative Schrage, and myself, Representative Putkaduk, present here in the committee room. Let the record note that Representative Kronk will be joining us momentarily online, along with, I believe, Representative Fields, but I haven't confirmed that. Also in the room, we've got, I think, first time you guys are able to meet her, as far as working in my office, Grace Irvin, my committee aide for the Resources Committee. And then we've got our recording secretary, Ariel, and our LIO moderator, Carson. And just a little housekeeping. The legislative leadership between the House and the Senate put out some COVID mitigation policy framework for conducting meetings and committee meetings, and you'll see that referenced as far as folks that we allow to sit in the audience, etc. And depending on those needs, we could take by a case-by-case basis as far as allowing folks in here, but I will have my committee aide in here for every meeting. Getting ready to move forward, just remind everyone to silence their cell phones and put them up on a notepad or something so we don't hear the vibration echo through the table. We don't have any other representatives with us in the audience. On today's agenda, we're going to be hearing House Bill 81, and it's an act authorizing the Commissioner of Natural Resources to modify a net profit share lease. This is the first bill, this is the first hearing on HB 81. Plan is to hear opening presentation from the DNR today and then hear public testimony on this bill next week, Wednesday. We have a few folks online. Ryan Fitzpatrick, Commercial Analyst, Department of Natural Resources. Tom Stoker, Director of Division of Oil and Gas. Colleen Glover, Director, Tax Division, Department of Revenue. And Johnny Meza, Department of Natural Resources, Division of Oil and Gas, who will be carrying our presentation today. Mr. Meza, can you introduce yourself, put yourself on the record, and begin the presentation?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Johnny Meza, and I work in the commercial section of the Division of Oil and Gas at the Department of Natural Resources. We at DNR appreciate the opportunity to present to you a bill proposal, HB 81, which would modify certain aspects of the existing statute for royalty modification. Moving on to slide number two. In this presentation, we would like to provide you with an overview of net profit share leases, a rationale for why DNR would allow for the modification of royalty, a rationale for why DNR is proposing to allow for the modification of net profit share, and an overview of the existing modification process. Lastly, we have an appendix section with more detailed information on prior modifications by DNR. Move on to slide number three. We begin with the first section of our presentation, by providing an overview of net profit share leases. And with that, we move to slide number four. Let's begin with an overview of net profit share leases. At this point, we would like to start with some definitions for the benefit of the public listening to this presentation. What is royalty? As we know, the state of Alaska is an owner of the hydrocarbons in the subsurface. And when offering oil and gas leases, the state provides the right to explore and develop those resources to a lessee. In exchange for that right, the state reserves for itself a percentage of the gross value of that resource when produced by the company. All oil and gas leases offered by the state contain a provision establishing this percentage, the royalty rate, typically at 12.5% and 16 2/3, which equates to 1/8 and 1/6 of the gross value of production. Now, what is net profit share? For a small group of leases, the state, also acting as owner of the resource, reserves for itself, in addition to royalty, a percentage of the profits associated with said lease. When a lease has these two components, we call it a net profit share lease. This type of lease is said to generate a profit when the exploration and development costs allocated to this lease are recovered through the associated revenues, net of operating costs, also related to this lease. When this occurs, the company pays to the state a share of the profits generated by the lease. Typically, these percentages range from 30% to 79%. Whereas all oil and gas leases offered by the state contain a royalty provision, currently only 26 leases contain also a net profit share provision. Thus, only 26 leases are net profit share leases. On the next slide, we provide a more detailed comparison between royalty, net profit share, and production tax, which could help illustrate better these concepts. But at this point, I want to pause here if there are any questions by the members of the committee.
Thank you, Johnny. Representative Hanna.
Thank you, through the chair. Mr. Mays, you said 26 leases. You said only 26 leases use a net profit share lease currently. How many leases do we have so I know how many 26 is part of?
Representative Hanna, through the chair, that is a great question. At this moment, I don't have exactly the number of leases in the North Slope, but I would say that the 26 net profit share leases represent a very tiny minority of all oil and gas leases that we have that I would say are in the hundreds.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Mazur. You can continue, seeing no other questions.
Thank you. We are now in slide number 5, and here we provide a table for comparison. As we saw in the previous slide, the state establishes the royalty and net profit share in the oil and gas lease contract and acting in its role as resource owner. In contrast, the state determines the production tax via the Alaska state law, acting in its role as sovereign. The DNR commissioner is currently authorized to modify the royalty rate under Alaska Statute 3805-180J. However, there is no such statute authorizing the DNR commissioner to modify the net profit share for net profit share leases. House Bill 81 proposes that this will be included in the royalty modification statute. As we will see in later slides, the modification of the net profit share has occurred once in the past, but only via legislative action, which required hearings by the Senate and House before a bill was passed. With House Bill 81, DNR proposes to modify the statute governing the royalty rate to include the net profit share. This does not impact the production tax law, AS 4355, which remains unaffected by this bill. As described in the previous slide, royalty is assessed on the gross value of production from a lease. In other words, we do not consider any exploration, development, or production costs when calculating the royalty payments to the state. This is a key difference with respect to the net profit share and production tax. For these cases, most of the costs are in fact considered. You may have also heard the term net profit be used in the context of production tax. However, when we use the term net profit in the context of a net profit share lease, we refer to the profits as being generated from this lease. In contrast, the term net profit for production tax may likely refer to the profit, that is, the value of taxable production minus allowable expenditures over a collection of leases, because this tax is assessed at the taxpayer level. Another important difference between net profit share and royalty is the commencement of payments to the state. For royalty, they begin with oil and gas production. On the other hand, net profit sharing will begin only after two conditions are met. The lease has to produce, and two, some of the costs associated with the exploration and development of this lease are recovered via the revenues allocated to this lease. In other words, we say that the lease has reached the payout stage. For example, in the case of the Uguru unit, a case we will discuss later in the presentation, royalty payments began when production began in 2008. However, the first net profit share payment began when one net profit share lease reached the payout stage in 2018, which is 10 years after production. Lastly, we also hear the term profit from the perspective of the company. How does net profit share differ from the profit that a lessee receives? For one, the net profit share is assessed for each lease that is a net profit share lease. In contrast, the profit that a lessee receives is likely assessed at the project level, which may represent a collection of leases. A second difference is that there are some costs in the determination of profitability for a project that are not allowed for the determination of net profits for a net profit share lease. Some examples are the cash bonus paid to the state to acquire an oil and gas lease, litigation costs against the state, and corporate income tax payments. And with that, I'm going to pause for any questions from the members of the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Meza. Representative Hannon.
Thank you. I have sort of two questions. You referenced through the chair, Mr. Meza, that the commissioner currently has the statutory authority to modify royalties. And can you tell me how often is that used? Is it something that is done annually, one specific lease, or is it a fairly common thing? Because I've never been in the royalty management. And then you also mentioned that we have once done a net profit share modification, that it was done by legislation statutorily. Could you tell me what that one was, when it was done, and the circumstances around it?
Thank you, Representative Hannon. Mr. Meza.
Representative Hannon, through the chair, those are very good questions. If you would allow me, I would go back to your first question. A colleague of mine has the information in that the current number of active oil and gas leases is 1,598. Of those, 461 leases are producing. Going back to your two questions,
Can you repeat the in-production number?
Yes. 461 leases are producing.
Thank you.
So going back to the question on cases for royalty modification, we have a slide coming up that which will describe those cases. Just to give a summary information, there have been 8 requests for modification of royalty by the companies, and we will discuss those in more detail later on. And regarding to your last question, Representative Hannon, we will also discuss in more detail in a later slide that case specific through legislative action to modify the net profit share.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Meza. One more question before we move on, Representative Hopkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Meza. So through the chair, I believe that the royalty rates for the different leases is public. Is that correct?
Representative Hopkins, through the chair, yes, that is correct.
Thank you. And so on a follow-up, is the net profit and when the and net profit shared lease reaches that payout stage, is that public as well?
Representative Hopkins, through the chair, because they are payments that the state receives, they are public, and we will present those information in a later slide.
Thank you. I'll follow up with that later slide then. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Hopkins. Mr. Meza, you may continue. There are no other questions on that slide.
Thank you. We move on now to slide number 6. On this slide, we want to show an example of a net profit share lease. By statute, the DNR commissioner has the authority to issue oil and gas leases via competitive bidding. In doing so, the commissioner has a series of lease sale methods available, allowing the offer of different types of oil and gas leases. Most frequently, the state offers oil and gas leases which have only a royalty component. However, in some cases in the North Slope, DNR has offered other leases which, in addition to royalty, have also a provision for net profit sharing. These are called net profit share leases. This slide provides an example of a net profit share lease numbered 312798, which was issued to the Amerada Hess Corporation in 1979 and later became part of the North Star unit. Notice how it has a provision for royalty equal to 20% and a net profit share of 93.2%. This means that after the exploration and development costs from this lease are recovered by the revenues also from this lease, the lessee will pay to the state 93.2% of the net profits generated by this lease, leaving 6.8% of the profits from this lease to the lessee. In this example, this lease was offered with a net profit share as the bid variable. In other words, the winner of this lease was the one offering the highest share of net profit. And with that, I'm going to pause if there are any questions.
Mr. Mizzi, you may continue.
Thank you. We move on now to slide number 7. Here is a graphical representation of a decomposition of the revenues associated with an oil and gas lease from a hypothetical oil and gas project under two cases. One where the lease has only a royalty component, and another one where the lease has both royalty and net profit share. Starting from the bottom of these cylinders, which symbolize the value of a barrel of oil, we have the cost borne by the lessee to explore, develop, produce, and transport that resource to the destination market. Because we use the same assumptions for both cases, these amounts are the same. The second section contains the payments by the lessee to the state, which includes royalty, net profit sharing, and production tax. As we mentioned in previous slides, every oil and gas lease contains a royalty provision, which is assessed as a percentage of the gross value of the production. Thus, there is no difference under both cases, given that we use the same assumptions of production and price for this example. However, we see that the presence of net profit sharing in a lease impacts the resulting production tax and the profit to the lessee. This is because the payment to the state via net profit sharing is considered under Alaska law for production tax as an allowable deduction to the taxable revenue for production tax purposes. Also, since net profit sharing is in addition to royalty, holding other factors constant, this will ultimately translate into relatively lower profits for the lessee from this lease. For simplicity, we are not showing here other taxes such as the oil and gas property tax and the state corporate income tax because we are focusing on the lease level rather than the company level or at the level of the tangible oil and gas property. And with that, I'm going to pause for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Meza. Representative Rauscher.
Thank you, through the chair. I was just wondering, Mr. Meza, I was earlier, I believe you said 8 companies have requested for this agreement, this legislation. Is that correct?
Representative Rauscher, through the chair, yes. The department has received 8 applications for royalty modification since the statute was enacted in 1995.
Then a follow-up?
Representative Rauscher.
Why would a company want to do that? Just my question. I don't know. Just my question.
Representative Rauscher, through the chair, in later slides, we have more information on the rationale for proposing and allowing for modification, if you would allow us.
Okay, I will allow you. I was just looking at the diagram, and that was, it sparked my question. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Rauscher and Mr. Mazur. Representative McKay.
Not to jump ahead of you, Mr. Mazur, but I believe the idea here is to help marginal leases to try to get them into production, because the operator would be able to basically write off his exploration and development costs against the royalty. So my understanding is these leases would probably just sit undeveloped unless we did this. Is that correct, Mr. Mazur?
That's precisely correct. The objective for DNR to allow modifications is to prevent resources from remaining stranded.
Thank you, Representative McKay and Mr. Mazur. And just to clarify, as far as the line of questioning with Representative Rauscher, there have been 8 applications to change the NPSL agreement, not necessarily 8 companies that are, I guess, supporting this bill. Just to clarify, Mr. Mazur.
Thank you, Chair. Just a slight clarification. The applications we received in the past were for royalty modification. Mm. And we will see those in a later slide.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Mazur. Continue.
Thank you for clarification.
Yeah.
Thank you. Moving on to slide number 8. This slide shows a map of the North Slope depicting our existing oil and gas units and highlighting with their corresponding numbers the existing net profit share leases in brown color, which amount to 26. An oil and gas unit contains a set of oil and gas leases. In some cases, an oil and gas unit is composed of leases with only a royalty component, such as the Prudhoe Bay unit and the Pica unit, to name a couple of examples. In other cases, a unit may have also net profit share leases, such as the Colbert River unit in the west side of the map. The Ugruk, Nikaichak, Milne Point, and Kuparuk River units also have net profit share leases, and they are located to the west of Prudhoe Bay. To the east of Prudhoe Bay, we have the Duck Island unit, which also has net profit share leases. And to the far east side of the map, we have the Point Thompson unit with also net profit share leases. It is worth noting that there are also leases which are not part of any unit. They are not shown in the map because all net profit share leases are located within existing units. These net profit share leases were issued in the late 70s and early 80s with the net profit shares ranging from 30% to 79%. We will talk about in a later slide what was that case of the lease that we saw before with a net profit share of 92%. It is worth also mentioning that there is another unit which used to have net profit share leases, the North Star unit, located to the north of Prudhoe Bay. The reason why we do not show net profit share leases for the North Star unit in this map is because these net profit share leases were modified in 1996 through legislative action into leases with only a royalty component. And this is the case that we were referring to earlier. We have more detail in later slides as well.
Thank you, Mr. Mazur. Before moving on, Representative Hannon.
Thank you. Through the chair, just so I'm trying to understand the map, and it may just be how I'm reading it. So, for instance, the Duck Island, where there are 2 numbered leases showing as net profit share leases, was that the entirety of the lease, or is there some part of Duck Island's tract that is not net profit share?
Representative Hannah, through the chair, that is correct. Here we're only showing net profit share leases. The remaining yellow area of each unit contains leases that only have a royalty component.
Follow-up?
Representative Henning, follow-up.
And would it be the same company that owns both in that unit, some that have net profit share and some that are royalty only, or are they different leaseholders?
Representative Hannah, through the chair, that is typically the case. We have observed in the past that there could be different ownership in different leases, but most frequently those interests are aligned through the leases.
Thank you.
Seeing no other questions, Mr. Meza, please continue.
Thank you. Continuing with this slide, with the map, some of these net profit share leases have already been sharing their net profits with the state, with a cumulative revenue at $1.17 billion. There are other net profit share leases which have not yet shared any profits with the state because they are either not producing or because they have not yet reached the payout stage. In a previous slide, we said that there are two conditions for the sharing of net profits. One, that there should be production from the lease, and two, that the exploration and development costs need to be recovered from that lease. Now we move to slide number 9, where we provide more detailed information for those 26 net profit share leases. On this slide, we provide the list of the 26 active net profit share leases with their corresponding net profit shares and royalty rates. You can see also how many of these net profit share leases have reached the payout stage and thus have shared their net profits with the state. Another relevant information is that almost all of the net profit share leases were originally offered in the late 70s and early 80s. Only in three cases, new net profit share leases were created because of lease segregation, which means that the original net profit share lease was partitioned into two leases. With House Bill 81, DNR is proposing that the commissioner have the authority to not only modify the royalty rate for an oil and gas lease or group of leases, but also have the authority to modify the net profit share for a net profit share lease if DNR finds that doing so is in the best interest of the state. When referring to the modification of the net profit share rate, we mean a temporary reduction of this rate, but also a mechanism for a gradual increase under certain conditions, which we will talk later in the presentation. And with that, I will pause for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Meza. Representative Hopkins.
Thank you very much, Mr. Meza. I appreciate you stopping at the end of each slide. Now I just had the question fly out of my head. Is there a definition for what best interest of the state would be in this case?
Representative Hopkins, through the chair, certainly. The Alaska statute mandates that the state maximizes the value of the resources that it has ownership, in this case oil and gas, by considering modifications of royalty, or in this case as it is being proposed, the net profit share. The goal that DNR has is to encourage additional production that without the modification otherwise will remain stranded, and therefore the state will preclude it from receiving those potential revenues.
Thank you. So that would follow up, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hawkins.
Thank you. So that would mean it's more production is the goal, would be the versus simple more dollars per barrel.
Representative Hopkins, through the chair, yes. More production would mean more revenue, and without, in the absence of modification, the revenues to the state will be zero and production will be zero.
Understood. Another follow-up, Mr. Chair?
Representative Hopkins.
Thank you, sir. So it looks like of these 26 net profit shared leases that we have here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 of those 26 have not reached the NPSL payout stage yet. So would those be applicable under this bill to have their net profit share changed, or is it only the ones that have reached that payout stage?
Representative Hopkins, through the chair, the bill does not contemplate a particular case for modification of net profit share rates. Certainly, your statement makes sense in that a reduction of the net profit share will impact those that are currently in the payout stage. But for those that are not currently in the payout stage, it could also apply if in the future they reach that stage. So in that sense, the bill is intended to be comprehensive to potentially apply to any of these net profit share leases.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hopkins. Representative Hannon, did I see your hand up earlier? Okay.
Thank you. Through the chair, Mr. Mays, I'm just a real visual learner, so I'm hoping you could walk me through an example with the Point Thompson, and I'm purposely choosing them because it looks like of our net profit share agreements that have not paid anything, they're the oldest, and they're the furthest away from infrastructure, so I assume that their embedded costs are the highest. And that issuance, the oldest being 79, the most current being 82. So if they could modify their net profit share down to, say, and just 10% instead of 40% or 50, then they would bring that into production, or they're just help me understand how we could get Point Thompson, which we've had in lease since 1979 and has had zero share to the state, into production. And well, this bill's not going to give us gas, someone said in the room, we're going to give us gas, but how do we...
I'm sorry, Point Thompson's a gas field.
Okay, so the net royalty doesn't apply, or the net profit doesn't apply? Walk me through that example of how this could potentially bring them in to sharing some revenue with the state and them getting more production out of that. And it's a gas field, I was corrected.
Mr. Mesa.
Representative Hannon, through the chair, that is an excellent question. As we all know, the Point Thompson unit began production in April of 2016. Currently, that production is defined under a group of leases that do not include any net profit share leases. That's why these net profit share leases are not currently producing. The consequence of that is that because they are not producing, no revenue is allocated to any of these net profit share leases. In more general terms, when a company considers applying for the modification of either royalty or net profit share, they have to provide a convincing and clear showing to the department that the modification will improve the profitability, the economic viability of a project for future production. So in that sense, it has to go through a period of review and analysis by the department. So I wanted to make that clear that just because this is available to potentially any company, that doesn't mean that the application will necessarily translate into an automatic approval. There is a vetting process.
Follow up, Representative Hannon.
Thank you, through the chair. Mr. Mays, did you say that there are some leases in Point Thompson that are in production, but they are royalty agreements? So it's only the net profit shares that are not in production.
Representative Hannon, through the chair, that is correct. Okay. The leases from Point Thompson that are producing are only leases which contain a royalty component. They are not net profit share leases.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hannon and Mr. Mesa. Representative McKay?
Just going to help out a little bit. Through the chair, Mr. Mesa, Exxon built the condensate line from the Point Thompson to Prudhoe Bay in approximately 2015, 2016, and that's why we, you know, they were never able to produce anything until that pipeline got constructed. So that's why you went all those years without anything happening. And they're producing condensate now from the gas that they cycle. So, hope that helps.
Thank you, Representative McKay. Mr. Meza, any comments towards that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative McKay. That is correct. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Meza. Representative Shragi.
Yeah, thank you, and through the chair. So just to make sure I'm understanding this correctly, so this bill would allow us to adjust net profit sharing leases for both those fields that are in production as well as those that have not reached that payout stage. Is that correct?
Representative Shragi, through the chair, that is correct. This would allow a lessee to apply for modification of royalty and or net profit share, regardless whether the lease is producing or not, because the statute currently contemplates clearly defined scenarios under which an applicant needs to support its application. And we will talk about those eligibility scenarios later in the presentation. So it is constrained in that sense to only apply for specific type of scenarios under which modification could be considered.
Follow up, Representative Shragi.
Yeah, thank you. And again, through the chair. So looking forward to getting into some more detail here in a moment. Just based on the conversation, would it be a correct assumption that we would be targeting those fields that have not yet reached that payout stage, such that by modifying that profit sharing agreement, economically they would be motivated or incentivized to have output and begin production. Is that correct?
Representative Shragi, through the chair, that is one possibility. It could also apply in general to encourage incremental production. And incremental production with the associated incremental revenues could come from both producing and not producing leases.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Meza and Representative Shragi. And I guess just to put some of Representative Shragi's comments and your answers into layman's terms for me, as far as the statute and the limitations for appealing for a net profit share lease amendment, what this bill would be doing is there are a number of hurdles in place, or not hurdles, but check boxes that you need to meet before you can even look for an amendment, and this is just helping that I guess flexibility from the state of Alaska to be able to negotiate and change those net profit share leases. Is that fair to say, Mr. Meza?
That is correct, Chair. That's correct.
Thank you. Seeing no other questions, you can move on with the presentation.
Thank you. We move on now to slide number 10. And here we revisit the case of the net profit share leases in the North Star unit, going back to Representative Hannan's initial question. These leases were originally offered in 1980 with a fixed royalty rate of 20% and bidders competing on the value of the net profit share rate. Naturally, the bidder who offered the highest net profit share rate was the successful bidder acquiring this lease. When evaluating a future development of these leases, BP, the lessee at the time, informed DNR on the expected economic viability of that project given the original values of the royalty rate and the net profit share rate. In 1996, DNR and BP, after negotiating potential terms for modification, proposed to the legislature that these net profit share leases be modified. And so these leases were modified in 1996 via legislative action. The legislature passed a bill to modify both the net profit share and the royalty rate for these leases. The legislature found that unless the net profit share provisions of the North Star unit leases are amended, production of oil and gas from the unit is highly unlikely to begin before 2002, if at all. Therefore, we can see here that the purpose of modifying the net profit share and royalty rate was to encourage production which would otherwise have remained stranded. With zero production, there is also zero revenues to the state. And with that, I will pause for any questions.
Seeing or hearing no questions, I've got a clarification, Mr. Representative McKay, before I give you the floor. Mr. Mazur, can you clarify to me through which vehicle the state modifies royalty rate agreements and the difference between that and net profit share rate agreements? Is it appellate towards the legislature to change both, or can the administration change royalty rates separately from net profit share rates existing right now?
Certainly, Chair. The DNR commissioner is currently authorized by statute 3805-180J to modify royalty rates in oil and gas leases if the DNR finds that is in the best interest of the state. The modification of net profit shares is not currently authorized by any statute. And because of that, in 1996, there was a proposal to allow for this via legislative action. With House Bill 81, we are proposing that such a modification be also contemplated under the statute that currently allows the commissioner to modify the royalty rate.
Okay, so I guess layman terms again for me, since 96, the commissioners had the authority to change the royalty rate, and now we're looking at the change of the net profit share rate, the authority to change the net profit share lease agreement.
Correct. In 1995, the legislature enacted a statute to allow the DNR commissioner to modify royalty rates because the modification of net profit shares was not allowed by statute. DNR and the lessee proposed to the legislature for that action to be considered. And now, with House Bill 81, we are proposing that the modification of net profit shares be also in the statute alongside the royalty rate.
Thank you, Mr. Meza. And are you going to give us a little history on the other requests to modify net profit share rates in the presentation later on?
Chair, that is correct.
Okay, thank you. Before moving on, Mr. Meza, Representative McKay has a few questions.
Through the chair, thank you. Mr. Meza, just to kind of put this in historical perspective, Conoco, I believe, owned those leases, and you'll notice the royalty rate was 20%, and they weren't able to, they're kind of marginal leases. They weren't able to make a profit. And then they sold those leases to BP, and that's when BP approached the state to reduce the royalty on that field or on those leases. And that's what I remember from that period of time. It received a lot of attention in the media, and I think that was the Knowles administration. And this is all done to, like we've said before, incentivize companies to drill and produce oil from leases that would normally sit there stranded. And if you wait long enough, the field will shut in, and then you'll never get it, if you see what I mean. So there is some incentive to do this before the whole field itself goes uneconomic. So sometimes it's better to do these things sooner than later. Is that correct, Mr. Meza?
Representative McKay, through the chair, that is precisely correct.
Thank you, Representative McKay / presenter. I like the professional insight and the background. I appreciate it. Representative Hannon.
Thank you. Through the chair to Mr. Meza, and a footnote from our committee member, if you can give me the insight. Since the modification was made to that North Star field lease in 1996 by statute, has it produced what we expected? And then secondly, was that still a BP lease that would have recently transferred to Hillcore, and I can't remember what Hillcore's Alaska name is, so apologize because it's not really Hillcore, but their Alaska division. So is that, is North Star one of those fields that just transferred? Is it still in production? And has it produced what we expected it to do once we modified the net profit share? Because it's been 25 years, even though it seems like a flash.
Representative Hannan, through the chair, the answer to your question is yes. The field has produced, following the representations made by the applicant at the time, BP. In fact, the cumulative production from the North Star unit is approximately 178 million barrels of oil, and of which, I'm looking at my notes here, and production began in, I would say, 2002.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Meza. Seeing or hearing no other questions, you may continue with the presentation.
Thank you. Now we move on to the second section of the presentation on slide number 11 and number 12 to describe the rationale for why DNR would modify the royalty rate. And hopefully this will answer the previous questions from the members of the committee as well. Now we are on slide number 12. On this slide, we present an example of a case where DNR granted royalty modification in 2005 for the development of the Ugaruk unit. This is a unit in the North Slope and contains a mix of four net profit share leases, highlighted there in blue, and other leases with only a royalty component. In their application and supplemental technical and financial information, the lessee at the time, Pioneer, claimed that it would not do the project without royalty relief because it failed to meet minimal economic targets. In its own analysis, DNR also found that without royalty modification, these resources would likely be stranded. Thus, with zero production, there would be zero revenues to the state. With the modification of royalty in 2005, which was a temporary reduction of the royalty rates to 5%, production from the unit began in 2008 with cumulative revenues to the state amounting to $145 million in royalty and $12 million in net profit sharing. With that, I will pause for any questions.
You may continue, Mr. Meza.
Thank you. Now we move to slide number 13, which presents two graphs with a goal to trying to describe why DNR wants to accomplish or is seeking to accomplish when modifying the royalty rate. Let's begin with the left graph, showing a projection of revenues and expenditures for a hypothetical project, which are contingent on the investment decision by the lessee. So we are in the year zero. Naturally, if the lessee does not sanction the investment, all of these projected values will become zero. We can see that the projected payments to the state for royalty, production tax, and net profit share, highlighted there in gray, blue, and yellow colors, are considered in the economic evaluation for this project. Moreover, the projected revenues represented by the triangles seem to be greater than the combined expenditures for most years. However, when considering the initial capital investment for this project, the bars at the left side of this graph, we observe that the value of this project in discounted terms is negative, represented by the diamonds below. As a result, the project is not profitable from the perspective of the lessee. The investment is not sanctioned, resources are stranded, and the projected revenues to the state are not realized, and they become zero. Given that it is in the best interest of the state that its resources are developed by maximizing their value, DNR may find that by modifying the royalty rate, in this example through a reduction, the value of the project becomes positive. The right end of the diamonds are now in the positive region on the right graph, and thus profitable enough to make the lessee sanction the investment. In this way, production occurs, and the state obtains revenues that would otherwise have been zero, but for the modification of the royalty rate. Since in this example, the project is also associated with a net profit share lease, it is possible that the same goal by the state could have been achieved by modifying the net profit share rather than the royalty rate. As we will see in later slides, House Bill 81 proposes that the DNR commissioner will have the option to modify the net profit share as another valuable tool in addition to royalty, which could prevent resources from remaining stranded and generate revenues to the state that would otherwise not occur. And with that, I will pause for any questions.
Representative Hopkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and through the chair. In this graph, and I understand this is a discussion of modification of the royalty rate, at what point in these years along the x-axis would the net profit share lease, sorry, net profit share change go into effect allowed under HB 81?
Representative Hopkins, through the chair, in this graph, the only modification that is taking place is the royalty rate. Okay. Therefore, the yellow bars in both graphs representing net profit share payments, they do not change, which means that the net profit share percentage hasn't changed. In describing this slide, we pose the question, could DNR have obtained a similar result of incentivizing the investment by, instead of modifying the royalty, we modify the net profit share? And we will see another graph in future slides which will show that.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hopkins.
Thank you, sir. Do you have a slide in the future that will show essentially at what point in this project the developer would understand that it's not a profitable field, and so they won't develop it, and then they would come to the commissioner and say and apply for the net profit change, correct?
That's correct, Representative Hawkins, through the chair. That is correct, and I believe that is slide number 24 and 25.
All right, I will try to be patient. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Meza and Representative Hopkins. I don't think there are any other questions. Mr. Meza, you can continue. Oh, there it is.
Thank you. We are now in slide number 14. With this slide, we want to show a summary of the history of royalty modification since the legislature created the royalty modification statute in 1995. As you can see, of these 8 applications, only 3 were approved, 2 were denied, and the remaining 3 were withdrawn by the applicant. Of the 3 which were approved, the decision contained a provision establishing the specific modification of the royalty rate. For example, for the case of Uguruk in 2005, the royalty rate was reduced to 5% since the beginning of production and then gradually increased back to its original level after, in this case, 1 net profit share reached the payout stage. And this is particular to this modification decision. Another example is the case of Uguruk, again, but for another pool, in this case the Nunatoric pool, in 2014. Even though the modification of royalty was granted, the investment did not occur. This is an important aspect of the modification decisions by DNR. They typically contain covenants reflecting the representations made by the applicants. In this case, since the applicant proposed an investment decision by a certain date, the decision by DNR contained a condition by which the modification decision would be rescinded if the lessee did not sanction the project by the established date. And with that, I will pause for any questions.
So just to clarify, it sounds like when you make these changes to either royalty agreements or net profit share lease agreements, you have a fail-safe clause in the agreement that if the investment isn't made by X date, then the agreement that was made, whether to royalty or NPSL, is nullified?
Mr. Chair, that is correct. The decision that the department issues contains multiple covenants and conditions intended to keep the representations made by the lessee as to why the project needed the modification, in this case of royalty.
Thank you, Mr. Mesa. Representative Hopkins.
Thank you, and follow up on that is this sliding scale mechanisms for royalty rates are specific to each field and developer in this case that were granted. It seems like a lot of latitude for the commissioner to have on his or her own accord. Would HB 81 allow that level of latitude as well to set those points at which the project has become profitable or has been producing profitably for years, at which point the net profit share level could go back to what it was originally, and how much leeway does the commissioner have in setting these new tax rates outside of the authority of the legislature?
Representative Hopkins, through the chair, that is correct. The existing statute for royalty modification allows the DNR commissioner the flexibility to establish and propose sliding scale mechanisms that would allow the royalty rate to be lowered temporarily with the purpose of encouraging production, but also to gradually go back to its original level or potentially even go or increase beyond its original level under certain conditions, for example, a very high oil price environment. So the commissioner has that flexibility, and with House Bill 81, we propose to maintain that flexibility and now to allow the authority for the commissioner to modify not only royalty rates, but also consider the option of modifying net profit shares for net profit share leases if the department finds, through the publication of its best interest finding, subject to public comment and to presentation by to the legislature, if we find that they are in the best interest of the state.
Thank you, Mr. Menzi. I appreciate that. It seems, again, like a fair bit of latitude because, as you described, it's not necessary for that net profit share level to go back up, as was allowed within Uguric back in 2005. That would not be necessary for the commissioner to put that sliding scale back in, correct?
Representative Hopkins, through the chair, I would say that would depend on a case-by-case basis regarding the cost structure of a given project, production profiles. It could be very well the case that the net profit shares do not need to go back to their original levels, but we believe that it is also possible that they could go back to the original levels, again, depending on the particular case of the project in question. And when we refer to modifying net profit shares, we intend to have that authority holistically, in the sense of having another option, another tool, another level, in addition to the modification of royalty.
That makes sense. Thank you. I appreciate that. It's a lot of latitude, but making sure that we find a way to make these fields profitable, develop them, and get them online is certainly a good goal. Be thinking harder on that in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mesa and Representative Hopkins. And Mr. Mesa, would it be possible, and I'm not sure if it's in the presentation later, to provide a brief overview, like a one-pager, on what it would take to, what those check boxes look like, that it would take to be even applicable for a NPSL modification?
Mr. Chair, certainly that is available. We can definitely provide a one-pager description of that. We believe that a partial answer to your question is also present in our presentation, but we'll definitely provide that one-pager summary.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I think that'll be helpful as far as, you know, phrasing the understanding of what we're doing here as far as, you know, are we giving do-all, end-all authority, or are there still, you know, sideboards to the authority given to the commissioner? And I don't know, so I'd like to see that kind of documentation that shows us that we still have pertinent checks and balances in order, but we also have a government that's nimble enough to react and negotiate and act on the best interests of Alaska. Thank you. Please continue. No other questions, I don't think.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to add one more comment to that, as I said recently, when DNR proposes to make a decision on modification, it is the department is mandated to publish a best interest finding, which is subject to a public comment period. We also are mandated, DNR, to offer a presentation to the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee, and we will talk about those later in the presentation as well.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Meza. Please continue.
Thank you. Now we move to the third section of our presentation in describing why DNR would modify the net profit share rate. And we now move to slide number 16. Much like the case of royalty modification that we reviewed in previous slides, the goal of House Bill 81 is that the DNR commissioner has the authority to modify also the net profit share for net profit share leases to increase production from otherwise stranded resources. For some cases, it could be possible that even with royalty modification, production could remain stranded. For production which covers net profit share leases, the modification of both royalty and net profit share could be needed. As we saw before, if resources are stranded, then the state does not receive any revenues. Such types of modification could also have an additional impact. Not only it would encourage production which would otherwise be stranded, but it could also extend the life of economic production for such fields or other existing fields. In other words, we could observe direct and indirect positive effects by these modifications. We will discuss these types of scenarios later in the presentation. Any questions at this point?
I don't see any. Mr. Mazur, please continue.
Thank you. On slide 17, we are now on slide 17, and another reason why we think House Bill 81 is important is because under certain circumstances, having the ability to modify the net profit share could provide additional valuable flexibility to the state in crafting targeted modifications. For example, in its review process of an application for modification, the state may find that it is in its best interest to modify the net profit share instead of royalty. If modifying only the net profit share prevents resources from remaining stranded, then the state would not have to defer its royalty revenue as they are paid concurrently with production. Alternatively, the state may find that a blended structure, a mix of both modifications, could be in its best interest rather than just using one lever, which is in this case the royalty modification. Lastly, the current statute for royalty modification allows the commissioner to increase or decrease the royalty rate, which could allow for the possibility of recovery of foregone revenues when we increase the royalty rate. The proposed bill includes the net profit share as another variable which could be subject for such an increase or decrease. With that, I will stop for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Mazur. Representative Shragi.
Thank you, and through the chair, am I understanding this correctly that what you're saying is that in a low oil price environment, it may be that a reduction in the royalty would allow a project to come online and begin producing, but then we would see lost revenue in the event that oil prices were to increase. And so by having the ability to adjust the net profit sharing percentage, that we would be able to provide that lower royalty, getting them online, but at the same time amend the profit sharing agreement so that should oil prices increase at a future date, we would see increased revenue as a state in that environment. Am I understanding that correctly?
Representative Strage, through the chair, that is correct. That is one plausible scenario for when we refer that with the addition of modification of net profit shares, the DNR commissioner could have valuable flexibility in making these targeted reductions or blended structure of modification.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Meza. No other questions on this slide. You may continue.
Thank you. We move on now to slide number 18. To help illustrate the previous claims on the benefits of allowing for the modification of net profit share, we provide a couple of graphs representing a hypothetical project to produce a pool under two scenarios. One where the production is defined by a set of leases with both types of leases, royalty only and net profit share, and another one where production is defined only by net profit share leases. These graphs show one measure of profitability from the perspective of the lessee, the net present value. They represent the expectations of the lessee of a combination of variables such as production, price, and cost. And an evaluation of these projections is carried out at the beginning in year zero to determine if the investment decision is warranted. In this way, if the right end of the curve shown in the graph falls in the negative region, the value of the project is deemed negative in discounted terms, and the investment will not take place. On the other hand, if the right end of that curve falls in the positive region, then the value of the project is therefore positive, and the investment will be sanctioned. Let us focus first on the left side graph and on the light blue line, representing the case without any modification of royalty or net profit share. For this case, the value of the project is negative. We can see that by modifying the royalty rate, the value of the project becomes positive. Here, we're only looking at the dotted orange line. But what if instead of doing that, we modify only the net profit share? We now focus on the dashed blue line, and we see that the DNR accomplishes the same goal. In other words, DNR may find that the interests of the state are better protected by having this flexibility in targeting this modification with the goal of incentivizing the investment of this project. Now we move to the graph on the right side. In other cases, it is also possible that either modification in isolation is not large enough to change the investment decision by the company. The graph on the right shows that for this case, only the combined modification of royalty and net profit share, represented by the gray line, would have a large enough impact on the value of the project. However, it is worth noting that besides the values shown in this graph, when granting a modification, the objective of DNR is not to guarantee a profit to the company. DNR grants a modification with the goal to improve the likelihood that the company will sanction the investment and develop and produce resources which would otherwise remain stranded. And with that, I will pause for any questions.
Seeing or hearing none, please continue, Mr. Meza.
Thank you. And we are now on slide number 19, providing the third reason for why DNR believes net profit share modifications can be allowed. As we saw in earlier slides, there was already a modification of net profit share leases in the North Star unit in 1996 via legislative action, which involved hearings in both chambers and the passing of a bill. In this way, a third reason for proposing House Bill 81 is that by providing authority to the DNR commissioner to modify net profit share rates via statute, this would streamline requests for net profit share modifications. With HB 81, DNR is still mandated to publish its decision via best interest finding, subject to public comment, and also offered to appear before the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee to present its findings on a decision for modification. And with that, I will pause for any questions.
Representative Hannon.
Thank you, through the chair. Mr. Mays, in the intervening 25 years since 1996, have other administrations proposed similar legislation to this?
So Representative Hannon, through the chair, as far as I am aware, I do not know of any prior cases.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Shragi.
Yeah, thank you, and through the chair. So there seems to be some compelling, there seems to be some merits to the idea of changing the net profit sharing agreement that we have with these companies with some of these fields. My question is, you know, we've proven that these agreements can be changed through the legislative process, and that's been done in the past. What is the advantage to giving DNR the latitude to make these decisions? What is the harm in not going through the legislature to modify these on a case-by-case basis?
Representative Shragi, through the chair, that is an excellent question. The current statute for royalty modification establishes a process that DNR has to follow for evaluation of both very detailed and complex financial and technical information regarding the project submitted by the lessee or the lessees. Certainly, it is. I believe it is possible that the legislature could review such complex financial and technical information through consultants, but with this proposed bill, much like in the case for royalty modification, DNR is proposing that that the commissioner has the authority to carry out this review process authorized by the legislature and still provide this publication of its findings for the public to provide comments on and for a presentation to the legislature. I guess another reason could be in terms of the process that an applicant submits an application, and they typically those applications contain information that the applicants consider to be sensitive and confidential, and DNR has performed a very good job as well in maintaining that information confidential.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Meza. I don't see any other questions. You may continue. Representative Hopkins.
Thank you. Something you said, Mr. Meza, perked up my hearing. It was the royalty modification checkboxes that a developer has to go through in order to get the approval from DNR is in statute. Within House Bill 81, would those checkboxes that the chairman has asked to get in a one-pager, would those be in statute in House Bill 81 or in regulations by the department?
Representative Hopkins, through the chair, that is a great question. With House Bill 81, does not propose to change any of the currently existing process for evaluation of applications for modification of royalty. In fact, House Bill 81 with House Bill 81, DNR proposes to use the same process for review for, in this case, net profit shares.
So follow up, Mr.
Representative
Chair.
Hopkins.
Thank you. So that means House Bill 81 modifications to the net profit share will be in statute. Those checkboxes will be in statute, not in regulations.
Representative Hopkins, that is correct.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hopkins and Mr. Meza. I don't see any other questions. You may continue with the presentation.
Thank you. And now we move to the fourth and last section of our presentation, which will describe what the current modification process is and how House Bill 81 is changing it, proposed to change it. And now we move to slide 21. As mentioned before, House Bill 81 would amend the existing royalty modification statute 3805-180J to provide authority to the DNR commissioner to modify the net profit share on a net profit share lease with a goal to encourage production from otherwise stranded resources. To add a fourth scenario for the eligibility of modification, something that we will discuss in more detail in two more slides, I believe, this scenario, this new scenario that we're proposing is related to incremental production from already producing pools, which will need significant capital expenditures. And lastly, to clarify a potential ambiguity in the criteria for one of the scenarios of eligibility, in that test production would not necessarily disqualify an applicant. We're moving on to slide number 22. We now describe what type of modification we are contemplating. The existing statute for royalty modification establishes minimum royalty rates, a floor of 5% or 3%, depending on which scenario we are considering. With HB 81, DNR proposes that with the authority for modifying net profit shares, there also be a floor for the modification of the net profit share, in this case, 10%. The existing statute for royalty modification also prescribes that the modification of royalty be based on a sliding scale mechanism. This means that a modification be a function of a certain variable, such as price, production, cost, or other variables. With this bill, the DNR proposes that this also applies to the modification of the net profit share. Having a sliding scale mechanism would allow for a reduction in the royalty rate or net profit share to be temporary and could also allow for the possibility to capture any upside opportunities in return for the downside relief which could result from that modification. Any questions so far?
So, Mr. Meza, part of your discussion triggered a thought for me. At what point, maybe if the developer isn't the one that's starting the queue as far as requesting an NPSL modification or royalty modification, is there an avenue for the state to be the trigger to request a modification change? But working with the developer?
Mr. Chair, the answer would be to the question that the current statute for modification, in this case of royalty, and now as it is being proposed for net profit share, comes as a result of an application by the lessee. And I believe this is the case because the technical and financial information, the entity which will have more of that information to determine whether an application is warranted would be the lessee and not necessarily the department. Certainly the department receives technical and financial information, but perhaps not to the extent that a lessee would possess.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Meza. Representative Rocher.
Thank you, to the Chair. I just wanted to follow up on that question just so I get an understanding. That without an application, the DNR cannot initiate the process. So there has to be an application by the companies first. Is that correct?
Representative Rauscher, through the chair, that is correct.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Rauscher and Mr. Meza. No other questions on this slide, and let me just put on the record, Representative Kronk has joined us and is on the airwaves. You may continue with your presentation.
Thank you. And we are now on slide number 23, which will describe the scenarios for eligibility for modification that I was referring to earlier in the presentation. We said that the current statute for modification of royalty is allowed only under certain scenarios. In the first one, production has not yet occurred, and the modification is needed for resources not to remain stranded. Because a company may extract hydrocarbons from the subsurface during the exploration and appraisal stages for evaluation purposes, HB 81 attempts to clarify that the relatively small production resulting from testing wells before a project is fully sanctioned would not necessarily disqualify an applicant under this scenario. The second scenario, in this second scenario, we are in a situation where production exists but is expected to become uneconomic due to lower levels of production, high operating costs, or low prices, in such a way that abandonment of the field seems very likely soon. In this case, modification may prevent the cessation of such existing production. In the third scenario, production has already ceased, and the wells are likely shutting. The idea is that the modification could bring production back online. With House Bill 81, DNR is proposing that the modification of the net profit share be also subject to this currently existing eligible scenarios. The bill is also proposing to add a fourth scenario for eligibility of modification for royalty or net profit share. In this scenario, production already exists, just like in the case of scenario B. However, the key difference is that the production under review is incremental or additional to the existing one, in the sense that it will only come to fruition after significant capital investment. In this way, an applicant under this scenario would be claiming that such incremental production would not be realized but for the modification of royalty or net profit share. An example of a project which could fit this scenario is an expansion of a currently producing pool by drilling new wells outside the boundaries of the known reservoir. Another example is a project targeting incremental production feasible only through building additional drilling pads or by using an extended reach drilling rig. In proposing this new scenario, DNR is attempting to unlock additional resources which may be stranded but for the modification of royalty or net profit share. By extending the producing lives of existing pools needing significant investments, DNR may also be contributing to additional resources and revenues which otherwise may not occur, and also potentially to the mitigation of additional footprint of oil and gas infrastructure in the North Slope. And with that, I will pause for any questions. But also, the next slide provides graphical representations of these scenarios, hopefully to provide a better description of these scenarios.
Thank you, Mr. Meza. Before moving on, Representative Gillum.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a couple of questions. One of them is kind of a follow-up on Representative Rauscher. He asked that any company requesting the change would have to put an application. Would the commissioner have the sole authority to approve that application, or would it have to go through a different body?
Representative Gillum, through the chair, the existing statute for royalty modification provides the authority to the DNR commissioner to approve or disapprove applications for royalty modification. That process, the intent of House Bill 81 is not to modify that process, which includes a significant period of review of technical and financial information. So in that way, the DNR commissioner has that authority granted by the legislature to either approve or deny such proposals.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Meza and Representative Gillum. Representative Hopkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And through the chair, Mr. Meza, I guess this is very interesting, and you're doing an excellent job of answering our questions, and the presentation is quite good. I have to commend you on that for sure. Most of my questions I've written down, you have come to answer. Where did the idea and the impetus for HB 81 come from? Is there a specific field or place that this has been approached to the commissioner by, or a specific developer? Or not, just where did this come from? Like Representative Hannon said, it was 25 years ago was the last time we dealt with this legislatively. So I'm trying to figure out why now.
Representative Hopkins, through the chair, that is an excellent question. With the level of production from the North Slope, from our different fields, as the members of the committee may be aware, there is an existing declining rate of that production. There are existing projects for new fields, new production, but also there could be cases of currently producing fields which may have projects to extend such production to either incur into additional investments for that producing field, which may necessitate this modification in order to bring them online. As far as I know, there is not a particular application, formal or informal, provided by a lessee, but given that the current 26 net profit share leases are spread out through many of our existing oil and gas units in the North Slope, it is not difficult to imagine that either in the near future or medium term, there could be such an application.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hopkins.
Thank you. I appreciate that and agree. I mean, we've been having declining production since about 1988, and most of these fields as well. All these net profit share leases are you know, most of them are fairly old. I would just be interested in hearing where the idea came from at the next hearing for this bill. Was it just a eureka moment that we had missed over for, you know, several decades, or did somebody come up with the idea, or we've seen it from another state or another government entity that has this flexibility? That'd be very interesting to understand where it came from.
Representative Hopkins, through the chair, we can certainly do that.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Representative Hopkins and Mr. Meza. Representative Hannon.
Thank you, and through the chair. Yes, Mr. Meza, your presentation's great. It's a very dense set of materials, so that's why we're taking it slow. Is there a companion bill to this bill on the Senate side?
Representative Hannon, through the chair, as far as I am aware, House Bill 81 has been the only bill submitted with this specific purpose for net profit shares. There is a similar bill submitted to the Senate Bill 61. With this goal as well.
Can I follow up?
Representative Hannon.
Have you presented Senate Bill 61 in the Senate Resources already?
Representative Hannon, through the chair, that is correct, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. No other
video for the weekend.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Meza. And I guess in the baseball with Representative Hopkins, one of the things I just wanted to clarify was that there are no pending applications right now.
Mr. Chair, that is correct.
Okay, thank you. No other questions. You may continue with the presentation.
Thank you. And we only have three more slides to complete the presentation. Now we are on slide number 24. And as I was saying earlier, the intent of this slide and the next one is to provide a graphical representation of the scenarios that we described before. These graphs, similar to the previous ones, contain information on costs and revenue associated with a hypothetical project. For the first scenario of new production, the graph on the left, the pool in question has not previously produced yet. In this case, we are in year zero, and the lessee claims that without modification, these resources will remain stranded and the state will receive zero revenues. For the second scenario, the graph on the right, we are in year 17, and the pool has been producing for the past 16 years. However, when evaluating the projections of revenues and costs from this project, the lessee expects that future production will translate into an operating loss and that the economic life of the field is nearing its end. We can see that graphically in the projection of operating profit for the years 18 through 25, represented by the black circles located in the negative region of that graph. In this case, modification via a reduction of royalty or the net profit share for net profit share leases could prevent the abandonment of the field by year 18 and ensure that the continuation of economic production with the associated additional revenues to the state, which would otherwise not occur. And I want to take the opportunity of this graph to provide an answer to one of the questions earlier in the presentation, such as we can see in this graph that for the past period, there had been net profit share payments represented by the yellow bars, but even though there had been sharing of net profits, the field may still need a modification for future production. And I hope that provides at least a partial answer to one of the questions provided by the members of the committee.
Representative Hopkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe that was my question, Mr. Menzies, so I appreciate you circling back to that, which raises another question on the graph on the left for new production. We are in year zero, and without modification, that field would not come online. But when a bidder is bidding on a lease, they negotiate in that net profit share rate. Is that correct? Because on slide 10, the issue you said at that point, the bidder who put forward the highest net profit share rate won that bid. So my question is, does this bidder get to say we'll share 99.999% of the net profits with the state, but then when they get to developing the project, they say, whoops, that's not going to be economic, and negotiate it back down to a rate that could be lower than what other bidders more realistically put in? Is that a potential with this situation on the slide on the left?
Representative Hawkins, that is a great question. One of the answers to your question would be that typically a lessee obtains, since the moment that the lessee obtains a lease from the state, typically we have a number of years, perhaps 10 years representing the term of the lease, or perhaps even more if the lease becomes part of an oil and gas unit. One of the reasons why a significant number of years passes since the lease acquisition until potential development is that there needs to be a series of stages in the development, beginning with exploration of wells, all following with appraisal of wells that will provide more information as to the quantity of the resource in that area, and lastly, with the development stage to determine how the facilities would need to be designed to produce that oil. Throughout that period, many of the assumptions that the lessee may have generated at the time of the acquisition of the lease may have already changed 10 or 15 or 20 years down the line. And therefore, the expectations that they had by submitting a very, very high net profit share may be completely different about the time when they plan to develop that field.
You follow up, Mr. Chair?
Representative Hopkins.
Thank you. So I guess, Mr. Menzie, what you were saying is it will take several, upwards of 10 years for a bidder to realize that it's not profitable, at which point enough had changed that it wouldn't be simply a low, to use a construction reference, a low bidder who then puts in a bunch of change orders knowing that it was going to be the low bid anyway and would have to come in much higher.
Representative Hawkins, that is correct.
Thank you.
Representative McKay.
Through the chair, if I could help, one of the projects I was involved with, we started drilling and our full intent was to frack. And because of the length of the wells and the rock was a lot harder than we thought it was going to be, so fracking became impossible. So we had to completely change our approach to how the wells were going to be drilled. And so sometimes you don't know until you actually drill and get some information, and then conditions can change pretty quickly, well inside the 10 years. So that's an example of why you might have to come back and get some help from the state to keep the project going.
Thank you, Representative McKay. And I guess just to, I guess, delve into a little bit more detail as far as the leasing, the life of the lease. Correct me if I'm wrong, but there are some stipulations as far as production phases within the time frame of the lease, as far as almost requirements for moving forward with the project, you know, within the you know, 10-year lease or 20-year lease, whatever it is. Can you clarify that? Just so we'd be avoiding a situation where there was a bait and switch as far as, you know, I bid on this lease to get it, and then I'm realizing, like Representative Hopkins was saying, that it's not going to be profitable. I'm just going to hold on to it for 10, 20, whatever the term of the lease is. Are there goals within the lease specifically that have to be met in order for the lease to continue to be legible?
Mr. Chair, the answer to your question is that with the issuance of a lease, a lessee has a term of sometimes 10 years, 8 years, or 7 years, depending on the duration of the lease when it was issued. During that time, the lessee has the right to explore or develop that lease as they see appropriate. In very few cases, there have been some work commitments proposed by DNR at the time of offering the leases, but most frequently they were not the case. Those commitments may become more frequent once that specific lease becomes part of an oil and gas unit, because under that scenario, the lessee has to demonstrate that there could be a resource that which could be explored and developed.
Okay, thank you. I think with a lot of the questions here, there's probably going to be some steeping of the leaves as far as the answers, and there might be some follow-up outside of the meeting with you personally, Mr. Meza. But seeing or hearing no other questions, you may continue.
Thank you. Certainly we can do that, Mr. Chair. And now we are on slide number 25, just two more to go. And which here we describe the third scenario, where we are in year 21 and production from this pool has already ceased. Thus, the state no longer receives any revenues from this pool. However, it is possible that with the modification of royalty or net profit share, production could resume, provided it is technically feasible. And for the newly proposed fourth scenario, the graph to the right, we are in year 15, and the lessee is considering a potential investment in this producing field to access additional production, for example, through an enhanced recovery program or through the drilling of wells outside the boundaries of the known reservoir. However, in this scenario, such investment is expected to be unprofitable, and such incremental production would remain stranded but for the modification of royalty or net profit share. And like we mentioned before, DNR does not make a decision solely based on the claims of the applicant. DNR goes through a period of review of abundant technical and financial information before making a decision. With that, I will pause for any questions.
Seeing or hearing none, Mr. Meza, please continue.
Thank you. And now we are on the last slide of the presentation. And here we want to provide an overview of the decision-making process for this modification request. House Bill 81 does not propose to change any of the modification process in that the applicants for modification still need to provide a clear and convincing showing that their application meets the statutory requirements, referring to the eligibility scenarios, for example. In fact, the bar is much higher in terms of the standard of proof required when compared to other applications received by the department. Clear and convincing showing indicates a much higher degree of certainty behind the claim that production is or would be uneconomic but for the modification. In this way, the applicant needs to provide abundant technical and financial information on the project and the applicants. Such information would be held confidential by the department if requested by the applicant. As mentioned earlier, the existing statute mandates DNR to publish its findings through a best interest finding and offer a presentation to the legislature, Legislative Budget and Audit Committee. House Bill 81 does not change this. Also, when DNR grants a modification, such a decision cannot be automatically transferred to another lessee if an assignment occurs, because it needs to have the written authorization from the commissioner. House Bill 81 does not change this. And that is the end of our presentation.
Representative McKay.
Through the chair, Mr. Meza, let's talk about, you must have some idea of how much increased production HB 81 might deliver to the state. Do you have any idea what we're talking about? 20,000 barrels a day, 50,000 barrels a day, the next 5 years, the next 10 years? There must be some, you must have some idea of the reward here. Can you give us a forecast of that?
Representative McKay, through the chair, it is quite a challenge to provide a number with respect to additional production that may come online as a result of this proposal, because for one, the production forecast provided by Department of Revenue and Department of Natural Resources provides these possibilities, but now we have to focus on the economic viability of this, of each of these fields. As I mentioned earlier, such information does not necessarily reside for all cases within DNR, and it has to come through an application by the lessee, and that's where how DNR finds out exactly how many barrels could be affected by this proposed modification.
Thank you, Mr. Meza. Any other questions on the presentation? Representative Gillum.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Do have a couple of questions. As far as the oil production, is there a minimum amount of oil that has to be produced before any of the modifications can be put in place? Just as an example, the 1983 Kuparik has a 12.5% royalty rate and a 30% profit share rate. So would they have to produce, say, 50,000 barrels a day to get that modification changed, or does it start with the first barrel of oil?
Representative Gillum, through the chair, the bill does not propose to have a particular level of production through which an applicant could submit such requests for modification. Certainly, that information would play a key role in the evaluation of additional revenues that could come to the state as a result of that decision. As an example, for the case of the Uguruk modification that I referred to earlier, when the department approved the decision for modification, the reduced royalty rate was applied since the first barrel produced from that unit, because the application was for the scenario where the pool hasn't been previously produced. But at the same time, even though we granted the reduced royalty rate for the first barrel produced and it had a defined expiration mechanism under which such reduced royalty rate would gradually go back to its original level.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Gillen and Mr. Meza. Going back to slide 26 and some of the overview of the presentation, and you've mentioned it throughout the slide, throughout the presentation, excuse me, that HB 81 isn't proposing change to the process in which royalty adjustment is presented to LBNA, but can you just clarify that what HB 81 does is that it then requires a NPSL change that's made by the commissioner to follow the same practice as far as going through the LBNA committee?
Mr. Chair, that is correct. HBA, House Bill 81 establishes that DNR follows the same process as when it is applied for royalty modification.
Thank you very much. And I guess just, you know, we've dove into a lot of detail here, North Slope specific, but I just wanted to clarify that NPSL HB 81 doesn't affect any other oil production in the rest of the state with any other oil and gas production sites.
Mr. Chair, that is correct. There are no net profit share leases in Cook Inlet or any other area but for the North Slope.
Okay, and if there were to be an NPSL agreement that were to go through, it would follow the same statute. The statute isn't field or I mean it's specific. It's not specific to a region. It applies to all oil and gas operation.
Mr. Chair, that is correct.
Okay. Well, Representative Shragi, sorry.
Yeah, thank you, and through the chair. So I assume in addition to the royalty rate and the net profit sharing percentage agreement that's in the lease, there are other conditions that go into a company's decision-making process as to whether or not they produce that field and get that oil to market, one of which would be the price of a barrel of oil. Is that correct?
Representative Shragi, through the chair, that is correct. There are other variables such as price, the cost structure of the project, and the fiscal system in general. And the reason why this presentation only talks about modifying royalty and net profit share, that is because it is within the purview of the DNR commissioner.
Thank you. And follow up, if I may.
Representative Shragi.
And so is there a scenario in which during our suppressed oil the market that we're in today, that we would modify the profit sharing agreement to then see the market conditions change, and in this proposed scenario, the state would receive less revenue than under the original agreement? I'm happy to restate that question if it's not clear.
Representative Shragi, I think I understand your question. I would venture an answer right now is that the department certainly considers not only the current price environment at the time of the application, but also what possibilities of that price level could be over the life of the project. So we certainly consider a highly optimistic case, a highly pessimistic case, and anything in between as well. In that way, such as to determine what would happen to the viability of the project if there was a significant change in the market environment, which under which a applicant potentially would no longer need that modification.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Trogi and Mr. Meza. And the rest of the staff members online, you know, thank you for being there in case there was something that we weren't able to address through the back and forth and the presentation of Mr. Meza. Hearing or seeing no other questions, just want to, I guess, recap some of the stuff that we're going to follow up on in Wednesday's meeting for the second hour of our meeting that day. I think majority of Ms. Representative Hannon's questions were able to be answered in the back and forth along with Representative Hopkins. And I think one of the main things that we're going to look forward to for follow-up during that public testimony, which we'll modify to include this, is the one pager as far as the process in which NPSL becomes modified and the requirements that developers have to do, have to meet in order to go through the process. I just want to clarify that there's nothing else that I'm missing as far as a follow-up. Representative Hopkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Where the idea came from was still something I was hoping for.
Thank you for that. Representative Hannon.
And I thank you. Through the chair, it's a similar question to Representative Hopkins. I'm just framing it a different way, which is, since 1996 to today, have there been other contemplated scenarios to bring before the legislature who could have modified them that didn't? Mm-hmm. You know, so how long has the idea been brewing, and why haven't we addressed it previously? Because clearly we've had declining production. And
Have we seen HB 81 any other time?
Yeah, any other time, or just a scenario similar to what we did in 96, mm-hmm. instead of doing a full transferring the authority to the commissioner attempts. And that might actually be, you know, perhaps industry is where those they thought about it, but it wasn't worth the effort. And, you know, Commissioner Feige's only been the commissioner for 2 years, so I'm not expecting that she knows this off the top of her head. But somebody there has been dealing with these leases for 25 years. Yeah. They're just not the person who comes out and talks in public. So,
okay. Thank you. I think that summarizes the follow-ups that we're expecting. And again, thank you for the very detailed presentation. And I'm happy we had coffee available to us for this. Closing for this week's HRES meetings, just want to remind everybody that we have a slew of meetings next week to catch up on the week that we weren't able to perform, where we've got the final wrap-up of our department overviews with the Department of Environmental Conservation on Monday afternoon at 1 o'clock, and then we'll be hearing a HGR 12 throughout the week, along with another follow-up with House Bill 81 on Wednesday, and then we'll cap the week with House Bill 98 towards the end of the week. With that, I don't see any other business or questions before us. I'll call the meeting adjourned at 2:56 p.m.